For any business founder, the decision to leave a comfortable job and salary to set out alone is always a big step, and often a first step into the unknown journey of entrepreneurship, and more importantly, toward following a true passion. For Matt Taylor, that passion is running. And back in the early part of this decade, Matt was in a great job, and it had a lot to do with running. He was the vice president of global running marketing at Puma, one of the major players in sportswear. But Matt wasn't happy with the direction the industry was going, with apparel in lots of bright colors and not much of a unique story between brands. So Matt started designing his own line to celebrate the heritage of the sport. Launched in 2014, Tracksmith is an independent running label inspired by the sport's culture and history in the U.S. Northeast and New England specifically, where amateur and collegiate sport are part of the identity. The track part of the name is a nod to a dedication to training where the Smith references craft and a commitment to quality. The company has grown year on year and continues to stand out for its clean and distinct aesthetic. Tracksmith also publishes its own magazine called Meter and operates from a flagship retail location right near the finish line of the famous Boston Marathon. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. For today's program, I sat down with Matt here at Midori House to hear the story of Tracksmith.
Even before Puma, I sort of always had this idea that I wanted to start my own company. As my career progressed, I sort of narrowed in on running specifically. And, you know, so while I was at Puma, I sort of got exposed to the industry from a global brand's perspective. I learned a lot there that I think has helped me, you know, since launching Tracksmith. But really the opportunity that I sort of saw was that you had all of these running brands that at one point were small, sort of startup, scrappy running brands, and they sort of really communicated to a specific audience and a specific type of runner. And as they got bigger and bigger, you know, the demands for growth caused them to sort of have a more generic health and wellness sort of approach to running. And obviously, a lot of them have gotten into other sports. And so I just wanted to create a brand that, you know, obviously we care very passionately about the sport and very passionately about making products and creating content and creating events that cater to the needs of serious runners. Mm.
You launched in around 2014, I think. And at that time, there weren't a lot of these small sort of independent niche running brands anymore. There used to be. A lot of them started that way, but really there wasn't anything like that. What was the market like? Is that what you saw or where you could move into?
Definitely, yeah. I mean, there were obviously a lot of very large brands starting all the way, obviously, with the Nike and Puma and Adidas of the world, and then down to the sort of more specific, still what you would consider a specialty running brand like a Brooks or a Saucony. And ASICS obviously is bigger than those last two, but also kind of fits in that territory. And there weren't a lot of startup running brands. You know, there were some interesting things going on in other areas of the industry, specifically sort of media, a little bit with technology. But in that sort of core, you know, footwear and apparel and accessory space, there wasn't a lot. And, you know, the opportunity was pretty clear, especially if you looked at, you know, at that point, let's say 7 years ago, maybe when I really first started putting some ideas to paper. If you took men's apparel specifically at that time and you took off all of the logos, you would have a really hard time saying which product belonged to which brand, other than Nike, which I think has always had a very strong brand identity and can do some things outside of having their brand mark on things that you kind of go, oh, yeah, that's a Nike product. But outside of that, there wasn't. And so there was a really interesting opportunity to create a really sort of strong brand visually, aesthetically, but also one that, you know, is obviously authentic and very credible in our approach to the sport. Mm.
A lot I want to pick into there. And I guess authentic is the word that comes up a lot on this show. And the interesting thing I think about the brand is it's really thought out. From your perspective, looking at really the rich history of the sport, I guess being based in New England really plays into that. But you can really feel and sense that sort of history of the sport and the connection particularly to amateur sport. Is that right, what you were going for?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, when you're a small brand, you don't have the budgets. And so some of it was by necessity and some of it was by desire. But we just wanted to stay away from sort of the professional side of the sport. You know, there's brands that are putting a lot of money there. And the way we kind of look at it is there's sort of, you know, two ends of the spectrum. On the one end is sort of the, let's say, uber professionalism, right? The people that are trying to win the major marathons, their full-time job is running and training to race. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have people who are you know, into running for the first time. Maybe they're doing it more for general fitness, you know, weight loss. And both of those ends of the spectrum are great, and they have their, you know, their benefits. But what was missing, what we saw as the opportunity, is all those people in the middle who will never be professional athletes, but they're very committed to trying to get better and trying to get faster. And so we always look at it as more of like a psychographic. If you're someone that has committed to the sport, if you're someone who, you know, is making time in your otherwise busy life to go out and train and try to get faster, that's who we sort of target, and that's who we want to communicate and engage with. We never talk about, you know, our target customer by how fast they are, what their PRs are, how many miles they run. It's much more of sort of an identity psychographic than it is any sort of, you know, how fast somebody is.
And so when you started to put those ideas down on paper, what were you thinking about as far as product? We should state that you didn't set out to recreate the shoe. You don't do shoes. You do technical apparel that has a very classic feel. So what was the idea that you had when you started to write those down?
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting is, you know, a lot of the professional athletes get product that the regular consumer can't buy, right? They're literally not available for sale. And at the same time, in apparel, there's not a lot of technology that's going to make you faster. There's no technology really that's going to make you faster. But there are a lot of interesting things on the fabric side, on the textile side, and a bit on the sort of technology side within the textile industry that can make a garment last longer, that can make a garment more comfortable, that can make a garment, you know, resist odor. Merino wool is a very good example of that, where, you know, if you're in, let's say you're a, you know, quote unquote amateur runner, you're not a professional, you're working a full-time job, but trying to get your training in, you know, while doing that, you know, maybe you don't have as much time to do laundry. You want a merino top that you can literally wear 4, 5, 6 times a week and not have to wash it, because merino is absolutely incredible fabric. So we thought about things like that. You know, we have another product that's called the Gray Boy. It's a cotton rayon t-shirt. It's nothing special, but if you're going for a 30-minute run in moderate temperatures, you don't need anything more than that. A cotton t-shirt actually works just fine, but it's a very sort of not heavyweight, but it's a very durable sort of dense fabric that we developed specifically with a textile mill in Massachusetts. So that's a garment that we intended that you're going to wear that all your life. And maybe that's the type of garment you actually hand down to your kids someday, because they last forever, you know. And we've seen that. We created that product based on some t-shirts that we had collected from the 60s and 70s and 80s that even today were in perfect shape, even though they had been washed and worn hundreds, maybe thousands of times.
That's incredible. And those types of pieces, as you say, carry their own history, and they're so unique. But I have this idea that there's really this sort of collegiate look to it. I don't know if that is from where you're from or what's that design aesthetic?
Yeah. I mean, certainly collegiate, classic, timeless. I mean, those are certainly words that we like to use. I think in New England, the history that exists there, obviously you have the Boston Marathon, probably the most known component of the Boston and New England running scene. But really underneath that is this amazing, you know, network of colleges and clubs. The Northeast is filled with, you know, amazing colleges, universities that have track and cross country programs. And so just a lot of the inspiration, things that we looked at, runners that from Boston, you know, a Joan Benoit Samuelson or a Bill Rogers, you know, they all went to university in New England. So when you're looking for inspiration, you're doing your research, it's hard not to sort of get sucked into the, you know, the New England collegiate sort of, black and white photos from the past. So we do draw a lot of inspiration from that. I think also right now in sportswear and in running specifically, everything was so loud and busy. And so I think a lot of times collegiate is a word people use, or sometimes people use retro or vintage, which we don't really talk about, and it's not really how we think about it. I think it's just that it's so classic and understated relative to everything else that's on the market that those are some of the adjectives that people sort of cling to when they try to describe it.
I think that's a really interesting way to look at it. And I want to just track back to something you said about the fabrics. You're not afraid to use cotton, which I think is really interesting, because most brands, when you're wearing running gear, you look like you're wearing running gear.
Right.
And it looks very technical. It's aerodynamic, it's tight, it's totally different and loud in colors, but you're using cotton, and most people today would think, well, that's just going to get sweaty and it's not going to last that long. But you have the complete opposite idea. I love that.
Yeah. And, you know, what we try to do is think about the specific needs of a runner. So like I mentioned, a cotton t-shirt works just fine. Again, if it was, you know, 90 degrees and you had to do a 2-hour run, you wouldn't choose the cotton t-shirt. But if it's 30 minutes and it's, you know, 55, 60 degrees outside, it's totally totally suitable. On the other hand, though, we do have fabrics in our line that are extremely technical. We draw some textiles from Schoeller, which is in Switzerland. They're one of the sort of premier performance textile manufacturers in the world. So we have some fabrics that are absolutely incredible, have a lot of technology and different performance attributes. We just look at it across the spectrum of everything a runner could need. And some days you might be going really long in the heat and you need something different than if you're going really short and it's moderate. And on the other end, you keep going down. We had, you know, we have a cold winter collection that we call No Days Off that is literally for running when it's 0 degrees, when you still want to get outside, but the weather is at its worst.
If I'm not wrong, this still remains an independent company and you used some seed money, I think, from developing an app, a game. Is that right?
Yeah, that's true. When I left Puma, I was trying to figure out sort of how I would bridge the gap a little bit between, you know, having a salary at a brand and, you know, what I knew was a long road to actually launching Tracksmith and probably a long road to actually drawing a salary from Tracksmith even after launch. So, you know, when I was at Puma, I worked very closely with Usain Bolt. And so, you know, over 4+ years, and he was a big video game fan. And so prior to the 2012 Olympics here in London, I actually sort of approached him and said, hey, would you be interested in making an iPhone game, just something fun and easy? And he said, yes. So, you know, we sort of put a little deal together for the two of us. And I went out and found some game developers and we built this fun little iPhone game that launched like 2 or 3 weeks right before the London Olympics in 2012. And that gave me sort of enough money to sort of bridge that gap. At the time I had married and I had one kid at the time. And so, you know, the idea of just sort of going without a salary for a prolonged period of time wasn't really an option. So that was my kind of hack around how do I sort of work on this thing that I really want to do, but give myself a little bit of time and financial resources to do it.
And when you did have those resources, who did you bring on board? Because you keep saying you had a team in mind when you were going to launch this brand, when you were setting out on that journey. Who did you bring along with you?
Yeah. So early on, there were a few people who were sort of involved. But as things sort of shaped up, I had a co-founder, Luke Skybeler, who was also involved in Rafa in the very early days. And then there were some other people very early on that more were in like a consulting capacity helping us out. I think we brought on our first full-time employee. It was maybe like 8 months or so before we actually launched the brand. So we had raised a seed round of financing and were able to bring on, you know, our first employee. And then, you know, it sort of grew from there. So
when you start that way, really grassroots and you know, DIY, doing this all yourself and really putting yourself into the brand, I guess a lot of the times for a founder, it is an extension of you. This is a representation of your life. So I'd just like to hear a little bit about your connection to running and how important that is to you.
Yeah. I mean, it's been a part of my life for, you know, since I was a kid. I grew up just really, you know, I loved sports. I really didn't find running until a little bit later when I was, you know, really young. I was really into baseball and basketball. And when I got to sort of the high school, you know, age, I still played baseball and basketball and ran cross country as a freshman in high school. But then it was sort of more obvious to me that I was a better runner than I was a baseball player. I still thought I was a good basketball player. So I ditched baseball and started running, you know, track in the spring season and cross country in the fall. And I played basketball all through the winter. I mean, I loved running and I also loved basketball. I actually still play basketball a little bit now, but running was really what I focused in on and, you know, was fortunate enough to run collegiately. So I ran 4 years in college, which became, you know, cross country indoor track and outdoor track. So it's really a year round, you know, sport at the collegiate level. I wish I was a little bit faster and could continue after college. I tried for a little bit, but wasn't fast enough to really make a go at that. But I kept running and kept competing. And then sort of life happens, you know, you get married, you have kids. And so running takes on a little different meaning than it did, you know, when I was in college and in high school and even a little bit after, where it becomes more just sort of a habit, becomes a part of your lifestyle. You feel really good when you're able to fit it in and you don't feel as good when you're not able to. But I'll be honest, I was just running. I wasn't really training. And I did that for probably like 8 to 10 years where I was still very fit, but I wasn't competitive. And I got, you know, late 30s, and I sort of was like, I really missed that competitive side of the sport. Like, I wanted to stand on a starting line and feel really nervous again. And so, you know, I started training a bit more seriously. At that point, my kids were getting a little bit older, and my wife and I had a little bit more time. She's a runner as well, so you sort of have two parents trying to fit in. You know, we trade off in the morning, sort of who gets to go out the door first. So, yeah, so now I feel I've sort of rekindled that competitive flame a little bit, and I'm finding a lot of joy again in competing and running.
Is part of that being involved in the running community in a small brand?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you can't go through a Boston Marathon. You know, our store is right by the finish line, and it's incredible how many people come through the space, and you meet people from all over the world of all ability levels. And, you know, every Boston sort of, when it ends, everyone's like, we got to run next year. You know, it's just so motivating to be around that. And our team is full of runners, you know, and some of the athletes that work for us are extremely fast, and some are not, but everybody runs. And so to work in that environment every day, you just get sucked into it.
Part of the community and culture is really an interesting question these days, I guess. There is this, in the past 5-10 years, a new running boom, a lot of people have said, and a lot of the big brands have clamored to be a part of that, I guess, the community aspect of it, the sort of the grassroots feel of it. But I feel that on authenticity part perhaps gets lost in that. So I wonder, as a smaller brand, how important that is to you to sort of be accessible to your customers and be a leader in the community. What's that mean to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's really important. And there has been a resurgence. You know, I mean, it's strange. You sort of feel it anecdotally that a lot more people, especially in big metropolitan areas, are running, right? It's definitely the activity. I think here you guys had cycling go through a bit of a similar boom, and it seems like running is following that a little bit. At the same time, though, like participation numbers in marathons and half marathons are flat or even down a little bit, depending on what numbers you look at. But I think we all feel it, that something is happening. And I think the shift now is maybe these are people who are getting into running, who maybe aren't running the road races or going at it the traditional route of like a running club, a traditional running club. It's obviously the rise of what people are calling run crews. You know, there's a lot in London, New York, and every major city really around the world. So, you know, for us, it's always been a part of what we've done. Since we opened our doors, we started hosting runs from our office, you know, from the very beginning. So it's not something that we're chasing, I think, like some of the bigger brands are, because they're just seeing the shift happening. For us, it's been much more just a part of who we are and what we've always seen as sort of our mission, and in some ways, this service that we provide, that we want to provide to the community. And we've built that really strongly in Boston, because that's our home and we have the space. Our store is really unique in that it's two floors, and on the second floor, we have sort of a lounge. We have lockers, we have a coffee shop, we have a physio and a massage therapist, and all these different things that runners can sort of, you know, just come in and feel like it's a home for running in the middle of a major city, you know. And Boston has great running, so it works really well. But yeah, we host regular runs from the store. Even, you know, when we travel to other cities for pop-ups, you know, we try to bring a little bit of that experience with us. So we'll host, you know, morning shakeout runs, and we'll host panels with interesting people, you know, writers who are also runners and different things like that. So being engaged and part of and supporting the community is really important to us.
I'm curious about the idea of the brand and how that has evolved a little bit. I mean, with a good-looking, stylish brand, great marketing online, this direct-to-consumer model can work quite well these days, but customers want to feel that a little bit more and more. Are you sensing that? People really want to be involved?
Yeah, and we never took the approach. You know, a lot of, I think, our peers in this space sort of, you know, were so anti-retail and sort of against physical manifestations of their brand. It was all, let's just do this online. We chose to launch online because these days it is the quickest and easiest and cheapest way to get a brand out there and to, you know, start to gain an audience and customers and traction. But for us, the vision, the grand vision for Tracksmith has always been, I don't even necessarily use omnichannel, but it's just been a much broader vision around, you know, engagement and community and physical activations. And, you know, it's just we didn't have the resources on day one to open a retail store on Newbury Street, right? That took us 2.5-3 years until we could afford to do that. But yeah, now that we've been going to a lot of the major marathons, we've been going to New York and Chicago and London and Boston, certainly we see the attendance, we see the people coming through those spaces just growing and growing every year. And we always hear it, it's anecdotal, but people say, oh man, first time I've ever interacted with the brand, you know, I've seen you online, it's so great to actually touch the product and feel the product. And so that's just been something that we've put a big emphasis on the last few years, is how do we sort of let people experience the brand in person more.
Has that been important as far as feedback on the brand and the product? Because I imagine you're quite engaged on the social channels and online, but what about talking to people that come out to the runs and at the pop-ups? Is that important?
Yeah, and we learned that literally our first pop-up. So we launched at the end of 14, and in April of 2015, we did a pop-up in Boston. It's really funny when your only interaction with customers is sort of virtually, right, and online. And we went into that pop-up thinking, you know, these were the things that were important and these were things that maybe weren't important. And you go into it and actually learn from the customer and how they interact with the brand and interact with the product. And so we've learned a lot for sure in those activations, and getting feedback, you know, people running in the product and things like that has been very helpful. And it's just something you can't do if you're online only.
Yeah, fair enough. And how has the product evolved? What are you working on now? Is there anything new in that sense, or are you just trying to sort of keep going with the classic pieces that you've created?
Yeah, I mean, we're still filling out. I mean, the range has grown quite a bit, but we still feel like we're filling out what I would say are just sort of like the essential running pieces, you know. So it's more of the same. We are doing a lot more sort of, you know, interesting, unique collaborations or sort of, you know, little capsules. We've done that with Noah in the past. We just did a collaboration with Woolmark for our No Days Off collection in the wintertime, which again was that sort of very cold weather training pieces with high merino wool content. So, you know, we like to have sort of core items that function extremely well for what you need. And then we like to sort of every once in a while do things that are a bit more out there, a bit more provocative. I mean, another example, we've done a post-run robe in the past. You know, the idea in the cold, sort of wet fall, you might come back from a run and your clothes are wet and it's freezing cold. You want to get out of your clothes, but you don't really want to put on your regular clothes. So it's something you can sort of put on, get undressed, stretch for a little bit, have a glass of water and hang out in, you know. And it's one of those pieces that people sort of, they either love it or they hate it, but I think it's important sometimes to push the boundaries a bit, especially in these sort of cultural, you know, if we can connect it culturally to the sport, I feel much better about that than, you know, maybe pushing something that's just a fashion trend or something else. So.
And with an office full of runners, I'm sure you get instant feedback and product testing is really easy. But what's your role in that sense these days? Are you still leading design? How involved are you?
Yeah, I'm still very involved in, I mean, it's still a small team. There's 15 of us full time. So I spend still a lot of time across product and marketing. I don't design any of the products. I would say my biggest involvement there is sort of on the beginning of the season, thinking about the stories that we'll want to be talking about, thinking about product concepts, you know, conceptually, what do we want to do as a brand, you know. I view that as my main role sort of on the product side, is just sort of guiding that piece of it, but get out of the way when it comes to design and merchandising and color and all of those things. But yeah, I still, you know, as everyone likes to tell me, I still have the veto button. So, but I try to stay out of the way.
You mentioned the storytelling there. That's a big part of the brand as well, the journal and some of the blog posts. Did that start at the beginning?
It did, actually. We when we launched the brand, we did our first issue of Meter Magazine, which was sort of a broadsheet format, three sort of long-form features and some smaller things. And we've kept that going. It's definitely been an important part of what we do. Kind of always have, again, viewed the brand as, yes, we sell men's and women's apparel and accessories, but the vision is much broader than that. And so we're just sort of, you know, doing a few things, whether it's on the content side and storytelling or on the event side. We're testing a lot and sort of learning and, you know, finding our way a bit. But that has always been an important part of what we do and always will remain that way.
Retail, print magazines, and running. It's clear to see why Monica loves Tracksmith as well. But
exactly.
Just looking forward, I wonder what else is in the pipeline for you guys. How do you envision this growing? What's your idea of growth?
Yeah. I mean, that's a really good question. We, I think, have taken a very conservative approach up to this point. You know, we spent a lot of time, really the first 3 years, trying to establish the brand. And as you know, that's not easy to do, and it takes time. And I think a lot of the sort of startup direct-to-consumer brands that have raised, you know, tens of millions of dollars, they can grow very quickly. But sometimes that growth can be too fast or not the best way to spend the money. And so we really didn't even start spending any money on direct acquisition until maybe 18 months ago. Mm. We really took our time. And you know, some might say we overinvested early on things like photography and storytelling and launching a magazine, right? Those aren't normal things you would do at the very beginning. But I feel like long term, I really hope Tracksmith is a brand that I can retire from someday. I hope it's a brand that exists 100 years from now. Mm. And so I always try to think that long term in the sense of like, what is the strongest, widest, broadest foundation that we can build on top of which we can start to scale? But the time's not now to really start doing that. There's still a lot of work to do. And so it's a very, you know, sometimes maybe slow and conservative approach, but I think long term it's the right approach. Mm.
Would you count that as a measure of success, being able to have the luxury of to be careful, to take your time with things?
Absolutely. I mean, and it is hard because we have raised some money, and right now we're in a good position where everybody is aligned on that long-term vision. But you hear brands where not everybody is aligned, and then decisions start getting made. Mm. And I feel very fortunate that we're in the position to be able to do it the way we're doing it and taking this approach. You know, and as long as I'm able to fight, I'll continue to push for growing that way.
Hmm. Matt, just lastly, I'm curious to hear about how this journey has been for you personally, coming from some bigger companies and bigger brands and now growing your own thing with a small team. How's that been for you and for your family?
Yeah, I mean, it's been amazing. When people ask me, you know, oh, will you ever want to start another company? I mean, I literally feel like I was built for this role. Like, I don't want to do anything else with my career professionally. I feel like I still have a lot of goals that I want to achieve within Tracksmith and for myself personally, but it's exactly what I want to be doing with my life. You know, I feel very motivated and, you know, happy and all of those things. At the same time, it's extremely stressful. And, you know, starting a company is not an easy thing to do. I think the thing I underestimated the most was people. You know, I felt like I had a really good control on like how to create the brand and you know, I figured out how to make product and get it to market and all those things. But you really quickly realize, you know, you've now got 15 people who are sort of relying on you to, you know, pay them every 2 weeks and all of those things. And, you know, sometimes people work out and sometimes they don't. We're not big enough to have an HR department. So at a startup, you really get to know everybody and they feel like a part of the family. And in some ways, you've brought them into this thing that you've created that feels very special to you. And so your expectations are very specific around that. And when an employee, you know, maybe doesn't work out, that's a very hard conversation to have. Yeah. I feel like it's something that probably doesn't get talked about a lot, but I would assume that other founders in these smaller stage companies that are growing, you know, rapidly, but aren't to 100 employees and don't have HR departments, they probably face a similar thing. So, but I think my wife and I and two young kids, I think we found, you know, a really nice balance and it works, and we've made it work with our lifestyle, but it's not easy, but I'm not complaining at all.
That's all the time we have on today's program. Thank you very much to Matt Taylor for coming in to share the story of Tracksmith. Find out more at tracksmith.com. The show was mixed and edited by Alex Port-Felix. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.